Welcome to this edition of What's Up Bainbridge, brought to you by BARN, Bainbridge Artisan Resource Network. I'm your host, Bob Ross. Today, we welcome back Karen Omani to further discuss his new book, The Brain-Based Classroom, Accessing Every Child's Potential Through Educational Neuroscience. Karen, in the last program, we discussed an overview of your book and approach to education. Can you give us kind of a quick synopsis of your approach in this book?
Thanks, Bob, for asking that. And in fact, it's a journey for me. The journey started when I was trying to solve a crisis that really got to me emotionally. I thought that when I got to this country, that I could find the answer to children disengaging and children dropping out and children getting into places where they were doing damage to themselves, cutting themselves, running away, truancy, and in particular, suicide. It was very disturbing to me to have children at age 11, 12, 13, 14, boys and girls, to make choices that were so grave and so final. I knew I didn't know enough, and I thought if I came here that I could learn quickly and bring the information back to Ireland. The big news for me, of course, was that when I got to the University of Washington, I began to work with John Bransford and his team at the Life Center. And the questions we asked had to do with children's engaging in learning systems. We were still in the old model. I didn't know that at the time, but the old model is the model that we grew up with. And that's basically the behaviorist model that has the rewards and punishments. And we all grew up with that. We know what rewards and punishments means in terms of two-dimensional good, bad, good things you reward, bad things you try and punish and hope that they stop. We didn't think that, when looking back, it never worked anyway. But we didn't know why it didn't work, and we hadn't even asked those questions. So when I came to this country and I began to work with John Bransford, and we spent 10 years and we spent $50 million in the investigation of what causes children to engage in learning, we walked away at the end of that with very few tangible resources and what I would consider to be solutions. And I was about to give up. I mean, I was at a place in my life that says, okay, maybe there are no real answers. Maybe this is the end. And then the miracle happened. And out of left field came two nurses from the School of Nursing at the University of Washington. And they asked if there was a learning scientist in the house. And I was the only learning scientist left. Everybody else had gone. And I signed up for 5 years of research with the NIH program called How Do I Learn? And I didn't realize at the time that what I was getting was access to every neuroscience that I needed, every neuroscientist. And so people who knew about ADD, ADHD, about stress, the people who were expert on sleep, on nutrition, on exercise. And I suddenly realized that these people had information in their ivory towers and their white-coated departments where they were dealing with monkeys and rabbits and cats and rats and mice, but they weren't in the classroom where I needed them to be. And so my job then became taking that information about the connectome and about the amygdala, about the hippocampus, the areas of the brain that I had no idea were connected to education, even though I should have, but I wasn't trained that way. And so my job today is bringing that information to teachers and to parents because it's relevant.
In the book, you talk about the behaviorist classroom. What's that about?
So imagine your child in a classroom today where there's a very big smart board, and the smart board, the teacher can press a button and all this stuff happens on the board. And in a second or two, there can be an email sent out to all the parents or sent into the principal's office. And so all the children's names are on the board. And if a child in the classroom doesn't do something that the teacher says is the right thing to do, the teacher can press a button and the child is publicly shamed by having a number or a letter or a color happen in front of his or her name. In other words, we all start at the middle. It says ready for work. And then if, for instance, Bob is not paying attention and Mary says, Bob just poked up my foot and he upset me. And then the teacher says, okay, Bob, I gave you a warning. Now I'm going to give you a red flag. And so it's a public shaming for Bob right in front of his class. But it also goes out to mom and dad at home and goes to the principal's office and the psychologist. In other words, we can do today in a split second what we should never have done in the first place. And so if we're not greenhousing our children and our in the classroom, we're going to lose those high ANS reactivity children. That means that, and I know that parents at home are listening today and they say, okay, that means that when I was in my class and the teacher said something to me and I was so upset, I remember to this very day, it cuts me in half right now, and I can still feel that stab of anger and pain and misery and sadness, because it stays with us all our lives. In other words, some children are so sensitive that we have to greenhouse them. And I use the word greenhouse because we talk about those children as being orchid children. And you know, if you've tried to raise an orchid, you'll end up with a lot of wilted plants. Or you'll have amazing plants. And I like to think about a very typical orchid as, look at Steve Jobs. He was a very sad orchid, but he also was greenhouse enough in his world that he was able to change the world. He put a ding in the universe.
Yeah, certainly did. All around us.
And every single child has the same potential, because every child has 100 billion neurons and every neuron has 10,000 connections. And if you multiply and do the math, you've got trillions and trillions and trillions upon potential in every single brain. It doesn't matter if the child is on some spectrum or not. The child still has the 100 billion neurons and the capacity. When you look at the connectome, and that means we are looking inside the brain and we can see with the diffusion tensor imaging images that we can see the white matter tracks, these circuits that cause the cerebellum to connect to the prefrontal cortex and get into the limbic system where the emotions are. We can tell that the children are building structures that will make them be the best learners and also contribute to society.
One place in your book, you tell a story about connecting with a young person, and you were, I don't know if it was your experience or somebody you're describing, but you talk about the importance of eye contact and when you're trying to deliver something or listen to something.
Yeah.
And when I look at this book and feel it and look through it and read different parts of it, I get two kind of messages. One is compassion, having that in terms of how you interact with young people, and the other is listening, really listening to what they're saying.
Right. And so if you think about it, that the child has this incredible potential, why would we leave any of that on the table just because they don't fit into the way I think the table should look or what they're supposed to know? In other words, we say follow the appetite, not the aptitude. So the child has appetite for doing something. It might be playing soccer. It might be writing. It might be building blocks. It doesn't matter. The child has some appetite. If we follow that appetite, we will find the aptitude at the other end. Instead of saying, okay, we'll stop playing blocks and let's do adding and subtracting. We'll get to the adding and subtracting, but we have to go there when the child is ready. In other words, we know how the brain works and we're very careful to make sure that everything we do in our pedagogies is aligned with how the brain works. And it all comes down to white matter structures. We didn't know about white matter structures 10 or 15 years ago. When we think white matter structures, we're talking about myelination. And if you don't have myelination, you're talking about MS. And that's a degenerative disease that causes a lot of breakthrough. The plaque that causes people's brain to stop functioning in terms of, you know, motor skills and verbal skills and all that. So if you have somebody in your family who has multiple sclerosis, you know what I'm talking about. But every single person can make myelin. And the point is that if we're intentional about how we do it, we can help children grow their working memory space. We can myelinate structures that are important for phonological loops so they can read and write better. We can myelinate structures for the visuospatial sketch pad so they can do more math and more science and all that. And it's not hard. It's easy. As long as we have mental models that are connected to what's happening inside the brain, as opposed to thinking it's a big black box that we don't know what's happening inside there.
Before I moved here, I was involved on a board for a international school that was really doing a lot of pretty interesting things in the community. One thing that was always talked about within that environment was seventh grade, and that's where a big change happens. Kids who are so full of energy and creativity and excitement about life, and then they seems like they hit that period of seventh, into sixth, seventh grade, things change.
Yeah. So there's a lot going on here. First of all, if I taught, and we all do, of course, our teachers know what a reticular activating system is, and we teach our students what the reticular activating system is. The reticular activating system is a tiny clump of neurons at the base of the brainstem, and on that little reticular system, a reticular just means network. I know that they use a lot of strange words in neuroscience, but it's a network of a clump of neurons. And these clump of neurons, they help us in many, many ways. For instance, if you think about it now, wherever you are, all of the information coming to you right now coming through your five senses, and there's about 15 million bits of information coming per second. Well, if that was all going straight to your conscious, you would be overwhelmed and you could do nothing. You'd drop the child, you wouldn't be able to bake, you wouldn't be able to, you know, turn on the TV, nothing would work. And so the job of this little reticular activating system is to filter out the stuff that is not important. So the breathing and the heart rate and the blood flow and all that, that's all coming through to your brain as well. But you don't know it. It's all subconscious. For instance, if I asked you right now to feel the space between your big toe and your sock, you could do that. Well, it's been there all along, but you didn't notice it. But now you do because I put your attention on it. In other words, your brain is doing amazing things all the time, but this little reticular activating system is helping you to filter out only the stuff you need. The bad news is it also confirms your beliefs. So if you believe that at seventh grade, bad things are going to happen, that's exactly what's going to happen. And guess who puts that into the children's head? The teachers and the parents. Oh, yeah. As soon as you hit middle school, bad things happen. And suddenly, bad things happen. Imagine we say to them, as soon as you get to seventh grade, you're going to be phenomenally successful. You'll be phenomenal at reading, writing, doing math, anything you want. Well, that's what would happen too. In other words, if we understood how the brain worked, especially the reticular activating system, we would never say some things to children, and we would never, ever do some things with children.
As we begin to wrap up here, Karen, let's talk about a couple of things parents and teachers should sort of keep in mind as we explore this whole set of concepts you're talking about.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm very passionate about is that all parents should know that their children have this amazing potential. And if they're not showing up in school and they're not being as successful as you think they should be, then it's not their fault. There are things that we can still do because, yes, every child has that capacity. And so if you go to the teacher and say, look, teacher, look, Miss Johnson, or look, Mr. Peterson, I think my son could do better in this class if you had any idea about what's happening in his brain. And the teacher will say, well, I know what's happening in his brain. Well, how do they know? We've never been trained. None of us ever got trained about what's happening in a child's brain. Now, today, that's different. If you got trained in the last 6 months, you might have some idea what's happening in the child's brain. But you better know about amygdala hijack. You better know about the limbic system and social emotional learning connected to that. You better know about the reticular activating system. You better know about the whole idea of the hippocampus and its connection to the PFC. And you better know that the white matter structures are the super highways that help children become successful. If you don't know that, you shouldn't be teaching. Now, that's a very hard thing to say to teachers because teachers are passionate people who love their jobs.
Right.
But there is a way out. And the way out, of course, is to start becoming neural. And without neural, we won't have the successes. I'd like to finish up by telling you about a school I'm doing in Bangalore, India. I've never been to Bangalore. I've never been to India. But because of COVID, I'm all over the world right now. And there's a school there. It's a 1,000-student school. They've never been to school because there's so much COVID in India that they're still stuck at home. And because of that, we had to invent a flipped classroom model that is absolutely phenomenally successful with these children. And all the teachers have been taught only neuroscience education, and they're having phenomenal success with these kids. And the one thing that is important is called the long-term potentiation. Now, guess what? Long-term potentiation is where the synapse is. That's the currency of learning. When you can increase the pre- and post-synaptic activities and make your child's learning capacity 10 times better by doing something special, then you want that. Well, long-term potentiation was discovered in 1947 by neuroscientists in Sweden, and they said, this is the most exciting thing ever for education, but no teachers heard about it. I discovered it in 2019. That's 47 to 2019. It's been sitting out there. They've been using it with rabbits and cats and mice. But guess what? We're using it today with children, and it's having an amazing results.
Okay. Karen, thank you so much for coming to this edition of What's Up, Bainbridge. And one more time, the title of your book and where they can find it.
So this is called The Brain-Based Classroom, and it's available on Amazon.com.
I want to end with a new item that's coming up in September of 2021. I'm very excited about this. We're offering a free workshop. It's a book study for teachers and for parents. It's free for everybody. You have to register on our website, and you can get that details from this podcast at the end. It's at 7 p.m. on Mondays once a month, and we skip January because we find that teachers are so exhausted as they start the new year that they like to take that month off in terms of the extracurricular events we do in the night times. So this is a 7 p.m. meeting on Mondays once a month to help us to dive deep into the constructs and concepts that are available in the book, The Brain-Based Classroom, and how it applies not only in the classroom, but also for parents in the home. We hope to see you there, and we welcome you bringing people in who have not heard about the book yet or who are still trying to figure out what's wrong with my child, why is my child so different from every other child, or why is my child struggling at school.
Thank you for joining us on this edition of What's Up, Bainbridge, brought to you by BARN, Bainbridge Artisan Resource Network.